Now, detonate the reality bomb!
I will build a great, great wall.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
Is the singularity near?
The truth is out there.
The military-industrial complex.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know.
Change has come to America.
Catapult of propaganda.
From a secure location on top of the ridge in the heart of the beautiful Missouri Ozarks, this is a view from the bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
It's a storm that devastated more square miles than Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. I'm talking about hurricane, then tropical storm Harvey, that essentially parked over Houston and the Gulf Coast for days on end, dropping historic levels of rain. We bring you this week a special interview with a fellow that we've come to know over the last 6 months or so. Met him first back in March at the Hear the Watchman conference in Dallas. Met him and his lovely wife, Michelle. He's leading a team to the Gulf Coast, putting boots on the ground where people need it the most. And we are honored to bring you as our guest this week, Coach Dave Dobenmeyer.
Coach, good to see you this morning.
Derek, man, you look good in that. Maybe
I know.
Start wearing one a little bit more, man.
Yeah.
We're on the same team, but it's honor to be on with you here, Derek. And we're a boots on the ground ministry. And I've spent the last few years of my life trying to raise up a team to be ready for some of the things that we see that are going on around us right now down in Houston. So, Honored to be on, and want to share with our folks exactly what it is that we're trying to accomplish.
Well, it's our honor to be able to point some attention in your direction for what you're planning to do down there. I've got slight connections to Houston. I worked for about 10 years for a steel pipe company, and one of our facilities was in Houston, Texas. So I've been down there a couple of times and seen the area, and it is a low-lying area close to the ocean. So not quite as the same situation New Orleans was in when Katrina hit, but Harvey dumped more rain over a larger area than Katrina did back in 2005. And so you've got dozens of people who, were killed and are still missing as of this recording on Friday morning. Tens of thousands of people, over 30,000 people in shelters right now. So by the
100,000
time...
100,000 homes.
Yeah.
100,000 homes.
So by the time you get there next Friday, September 8th, the 8th, the plan is anyway, people are still going to be... digging out, in a sense. Governor Perry said that, or not Governor Perry, but Governor Abbott, rather, said that the floodwaters will probably just be receded by the time you all get down there. So what's the plan, Coach? What do you guys hope to accomplish when you get down there?
Well, thanks, Derek, again. And by the way, we're already down there, brother.
With Ray Gaino. Right? Ray Gaino is just north of town there in Conroe, Texas. So you've got a friend right there.
Yep, we've got some local guys down there that are helping us, but we got a boat brigade out there of about a dozen guys that we've been able to partner with, Derek, and they've been doing some harrowing rescues. It's hard to believe that we could be this far along into this event and people still not be rescued, sitting on top of their houses, trapped up in the second floor. And so we have guys who are down there right now. We've already sent $7,000 down there to a boat brigade. We don't think much about these guys who go down their own to try to rescue people, that they got to pay for their gas. And of course, gas is getting short down there, the transportation, their food, all that kind of stuff. So we've got an active group of brigade guys on the ground or in the water already rescuing people. But long term, we're looking to the 21st. We have right now 30 people. That's where we're limiting at the first shot. 30 people that are going to be boots on the ground. We're going to hit the ground down in two different cities. We're still working on the logistics a little bit of where they're going to be. And we're going to share the hope of Jesus Christ, the gospel of Jesus Christ, Derek. One of the things that we think is unique about our ministry, not that we're better than anybody else, we're certainly a very small but effective ministry, is, Red Cross, FEMA, they're all so impersonal. But we want to go Christian to Christian, church to church, and we want to be able to not only share the bread that keeps people alive, but the bread of life and drive people towards Jesus Christ and be able to equip and connect pastors with people who have lost everything or just devastated. So we set up a connection where we go down directly, we raise the money here, we take it down, we put it in the hands of local pastors on the ground, we take supplies, we set up on street corners, Derek, we cook hot meals. These people down there, they're eating those MREs, I mean, it's food, but brother, it ain't food. And when we fire up our grills and they smell charcoal and they smell a hot hamburger, buddy, they come running. So we did this in Louisiana a year ago, actually, right now. And we served about 6,000 meals while we're down there. And we plan to probably triple that. In the meantime, we're taking a lot of supplies, you know, all the products. Derek, these people are going to go back to their homes. Right now, they're not even there, right? So we have people on the ground who are trying to rescue them. But when they go back, the water recedes a week from today. And they go back and they walk in their house. Can you imagine what they're going to see when they walk in there? And so we know that the scripture says that hope deferred maketh a heart sick. And we just want to be on the ground when they get back home to give them a little bit of hope, feed them a hamburger and help them rip out some drywall, do whatever we can to try to bring a little bit of hope.
Now, you say you're limiting to about 30 volunteers. Do you already have
first
that team?
First time through.
Okay, you already have that team assembled then?
Yeah, well, right now we have over 30 that want to go. And what we're going to do, Derek, we're going to take a group down on the 21st, and then we're going to try to establish a group every weekend after that. So a group of the 21st, another group the 28th. We did this in Hurricane Katrina, which ironically was 12 years ago this week. And that was the first this type of outreach that we had ever done, and kind of a rookie at doing it. But we kept people on the ground for 8 consecutive weeks down there. And we see that we would like to do the same thing down in this area. Again, we're not going to go to Houston, Derek. That's where everybody is. FEMA's there. Everybody's there. It's the small towns that, you know, a town of 10,000 people or 5,000 people that, I mean, let's face it. It's hard to get to those places, and there's only so many resources. So that's why we're using the boots on the ground that we have down there right now. I'm flying down next Friday, do a lot of logistical work, and then we're going to set up stations where we're going to minister out of over the next couple months.
Now, give people a sense for what it's like when you go into an area like that. We had a friend, have a friend who went down from Rochester, New York to assist around Bay St. Louis after Katrina. And the way he described the devastation was mind-boggling. But I think it makes sense. When you're looking at the pictures, you're getting a limited perspective. You get maybe a 60-degree view, whereas, you know, the human vision, you know, you get, you know, it's hard to imagine, like, being in a virtual reality environment, I guess, compared to looking at a television screen. What is it like when you're actually there compared to what we see on the television screens?
Derek, you get one of those feelings in the pit of your stomach that you can't even explain. When you drive down one of those cul-de-sac that now the water has drained out of, and you look at the devastation of people as they begin to pull stuff out of their homes. Derek, think about your living room, my living room. What if there were 4 feet of water in my living room? Can you imagine what everything would be destroyed? I mean, it's just beyond what we can imagine. And so what we see is a lot of, dare I say it, zombie, blank stares. I remember a guy coming up to me when we were at Katrina, and also last year when we were in Louisiana area. He says, listen, I've worked every day since I was 16 years old, and everything I own is in the trunk of my car. Brother, that's pretty sobering, right? Now, what do you do? See, we can't replace everything for him. We couldn't possibly raise enough money to restore people. My brother, we can share the gospel of Jesus Christ with him. We can give him a hamburger and a bag of chips, and we can give him a cold drink, and we can restore some hope. And we can go and we can cut up some trees, and we can tear out some drywall, and we can do all that kind of stuff and make things available. The thing that's going to be so important at this time, Derek, is we've really, really, our churches are not prepared. I know you guys are big on preparation. Our churches are not prepared. I saw this when we were down in Hurricane Katrina. And again, we've been to a lot of the tornadoes and everything, Derek. Churches don't have rescue plans. They don't have emergency plans. They really don't. And we saw that with Joel Osteen, and I'm not another guy on the nose plan when this devastation hit. So we got to get ahead of the game, and we go down there and we try to put into the hands supplies for local pastors that they can help their flock with. And at the meantime, reach out to people who aren't church, who really have lost everything and devastated. And so, you know, you can't really reach somebody. Scripture is very clear on this. You got to feed their belly, Derek. You feed their belly, then they're open to the gospel. So that's what we try to do. As I said, restore hope. We lean inside cars and we pray with people. And, you know, when we set up our feeding station and we stick our head in there and we hand them their food, we say, is there anything we can pray with you about? And Derek, it's unbelievable, man. Tears just boom. They just come from people. They're so heart sick, brother. They're heart sick. I can't restore the house, but I can restore their hope.
So what response have you gotten in the past, and how open are people to hearing the gospel at this point? I mean, some might think at a time like that there'd be some anger. How could a good God let good people suffer like this? What kind of response do you get when you offer some help and then offer the gospel?
It's very interesting. Some people don't want the gospel, right? They're just mad at God, right? And then you have the other side of it, Derek, which is what you just said, the bless me gospel, the prosperity gospel. Man, right. That turns that thing upside down on its head, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But we find even when we talk to those people, they have a deep belief in God. Their belief in God maybe is not directed the right way. It's about stuff and, worldly stuff. But deep inside, they have a relationship with Jesus. So we try to steer them back to, that the rain falls on the just and the unjust, to the people who are just angry at God. Derek, I've never in all my time ever heard anybody reject a prayer, ever. And so we just do that, just reach in, pray. I said, brother, I'm praying for you. I can't, I'd be lying if I told you what you were going through, that I knew what you were going through, but just want you to know that there is a God out there and he does care. And I pray that you're able to find him in this difficult time. So, we try not to be combative. But the thing that makes us unique, and by the way, Derek, I know you'll put this up there. We're a small ministry, CoachDaveLive.com.
Right, right.
CoachDaveLive.com. We're out of Ohio. We think we are unique in that we are the...
No, we lost our connection, sadly. Well, hopefully we can get this back in just a second. So we're continuing now with the extended interview on A View from the Bunker, and we're talking with Coach Dave Dobenmeyer of Pass the Salt Ministries about their Boots on the Ground effort to the Houston area later this week. Dave, let's talk a little bit about your ministry. I have to confess that if it wasn't for Mike Kerr and Jeannie Moore of Hear the Watchman, I had only known about you by reputation for things that I've read. And to be honest with you, a lot of it was stuff that you've done that's attracted the attention of left-wing websites like Right Wing Watch. Oh, look at this.
I'm on that Southern Poverty Law Center hate list. How about that, Derek?
Right,
that's
right.
Something to be proud of, isn't it?
Yeah, how dare you go into areas of need and deliver food and prayers and stuff? What a hater.
We do a little bit more than that, though, Derek. And I got those black eyes. I'm a real quick overview. I was a high school football coach in Ohio. I got sued by the American Civil Liberties Union in 1997 for praying with our football.
I remember
I went through a two-year battle with them for my God-given right to be able to pray. I didn't lose my job. My last year we were undefeated. But we walked away, my wife and I, and we started Pass the Salt Ministries because I was telling people back then, the British are coming. I saw the Antichrist wave that was coming over back in 1997. And I have to be honest with you, people were real receptive to it. It's been a long, hard slog, Derek, of 17 years. I've been trying to awaken the church and get people to understand what's going on. And I'm a football coach and an action kind of guy. And I said, Scripture says faith without works is dead. We can pray all we want to, but somebody's going to have to go reclaim some turf. So we've been working real hard for 17 years, gay pride parades, abortion clinics, all that stuff that the church doesn't really want to get dirty with,
Yeah.
Well, I go get dirty with it. We go in it. We go earnestly contend for the faith in those areas. And so we stir up a lot of people that don't like us, and a lot of the church is afraid of it. But Derek, I can do mercy ministries too. I can go sit on a corner and pray somebody. I can go to a nursing home. And we're all called maybe to do different things. We're called, I believe, to do the hard things, to be the boots on the ground, to be the SWAT team, if you will, the ones that hit the beach and really contend for the faith. So that's how we got started. And we've been doing it for about 17 years. Part of what we do is disaster relief. But the main part of what we do, Derek, is we're fighting for the moral condition of this nation. They attack the assault on Western civilization, that if the American church goes under, Christianity is not going to fail, brother, but the attack on Western civilization is going, I don't know, man, there'd be maybe 500 years of darkness if that were to be happening. People like to say, well, it's the end times, coach, and, quit worrying about it, just preach the gospel. And we do that, Derek. But I say, well, what is the gospel, man? And the Lord told me to occupy till he returns, earnestly contend for the faith. So that's what we do. And we try to raise up other men and other women to go with us. And I got to tell you, we're really starting to get traction. And the reason is, Derek, for the first time in the 17 years I've been doing this, people now see the enemy.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
now understand and whatever their name is, Antifa. They see the other side for the first time. And they realize that if we don't stand up and push back, that that other side is going to steamroll us and take away every one of the God-given rights we have.
Yeah. And we're living in a part of the country here in the Ozarks that is, I would describe it as the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Yes, sir.
Barna Group says that when they surveyed the major cities in the United States, a higher percentage of adults in the Springfield, Missouri area, which is basically where we are, said that they were absolutely committed to their faith than anywhere else in the country. More than 80%, 82%, if I remember that. You can't get 80% of Americans to agree on anything, but in Springfield, Missouri. But that means we're sort of like a little enclave here, because I grew up in places where you don't talk the way people around here talk. Chicago, Illinois. I worked for a time in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. St. Louis, Missouri, which is a little closer to the Ozarks here. But even there, you don't see people openly discussing their faith the way it is here. Where we're at, it's easy to miss some of the trends that have been growing across the country. And now, because of Antifa openly attacking, I mean, physically assaulting anyone who supports our president, you know, much less supports Jesus Christ, it's a little easier for us to see what you have been seeing for the last 20 years or so. Why do you think it took the images, the disturbing images on our on cable news to wake people up?
Well, I think they were wakened up, really. I believe Trump woke them up. You know, and Derek, I lost a lot of friends because I was for Trump before hardly any of my friends were. But I just saw something. Listen, in the Bible Belt, when Ted Cruz went down into the South, he didn't win down in the South. He was the Christian candidate, wasn't he? Yep. I love Ted Cruz.
Yep.
But he didn't win down there. Why? I think it was because people sitting in the pews all across America looked at what was going on in America and said, you know, I love my pastor, but we don't need him for president. We need somebody who's going to upset the apple cart. And I think Donald Trump started a trend across America where it became okay to speak what was on your mind again, Derek.
Yeah.
And that's been hard for Christians. We don't like that very well, right? We want to go along to get along, but we see how that's been working, and it hasn't been very good. And so I try to tell people this. There are only two teams. There's the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman. We know that right from Genesis, right?
Yeah.
And it's an eternal struggle that's going on. Jesus himself said, you're either for me or you're against me. You either gather, you scatter. There's no demilitarized zone here. And so a lot of Christians are beginning to waken up to the idea, you know what? The devil's got a team. And I've been sitting around the whole time watching the devil's team run over the top of everybody. And what is going on here with God's team? We're supposed to be occupying till he returns. We're supposed to be the ones where the righteous are the ones who are as bold as lions, and evil men flee when no one pursues. And if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? That's the spirit I think it's going on. And as we look and people talk about it being the end times, I'm not going to debate whether that's true or not, Derek, but my Bible says this: in the last days, he's going to pour out his spirit upon all flesh. There's going to be a great outpouring of the spirit of God. And I'm waiting on that to happen. I watch what's going on in the stars. When I see the revival begin to happen, then I know that is a redemption draweth nigh, at least the way that I read it.
Yeah.
So I watch the stars, I watch the sky, but brother, I got a sickle or a hammer in one hand and a Bible in another, and I'm going to go to work. I'm going to try to continue to do what Christ said to us, pray that his kingdom would come in earth as it was in heaven. And so we do that, and I try to call other men to do that. I know I'm a little bit radical. I know I'm a little bit hot. I understand all that. But I'm finding a group of men who are sick and tired, Derek, of what's going to be left over to their children and their grandchildren, and realize if we don't stand up and push back now, our children and our grandchildren, brother, they're going to live in hell, man.
Yeah. One of the most remarkable moments, let me rephrase that. Some of the most remarkable moments I've seen in the last year. And I've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of people between my broadcasting career, which goes back to 1980, and in a four-year sales career, outside sales, 20-year sales career, but I spent 4 years in outside sales talking to dozens of people every week. And over the last 6 months, had the opportunity to see two men in particular who I think people would not expect to be as emotional as they can be literally weep. One was Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis, a career military man who still works inside the Pentagon. There's an interview coming that people on Skywatch TV will be privileged to see later this year as his new book, The Deeper State, which is about the influence of not just...
And the devil's team, right?
Exactly right, yeah. The deeper state. And he wept for his children and grandchildren. That's what got me thinking along these lines.
Wow.
And the future of our nation. And the other coach was back at the Hear the Watchman conference in Dallas in March. You and your lovely wife, Michelle, were part of a panel that Sharon and I were honored to be a part of, talking about godly marriage. And I tend to get choked up fairly easily these days, but then I was not a football coach. I was not a military man who's got Army Ranger training either. So I think people will believe it of me a little easier. Real men, football coaches, career soldiers, can be that passionate and that concerned about their direction, the direction of the nation, to direct and how their children and grandchildren will be affected by it. Coach, why are we men so conditioned to avoid that kind of emotional display?
First of all, that was a powerful moment, wasn't it, Derek? That was just from the Lord, brother. That just was from the Lord. And you know, the truth of it is, men don't know how to pray for their wives and their children. It's just the truth. And then in that room, when I did that and I laid my hand on my wife's head and prayed, I heard sobbing go across the room. I'm sure you were there. It was quite a moment, man. It was quite a moment. And I don't know why, Derek. I think it's because we have made the pulpit something the pulpit was never supposed to be. The pulpit has become the professional Christian. The pulpit has become the expert Christian. And as a result, we're commanded in Scripture that the fathers are to teach these values to our children. But we've trusted the churches to do it, the Sunday school classes, the pastor, the youth group. And as a result, dad goes out and he earns the bacon. He goes out and he puts everybody through school and buys all the cars. And then the moral, spiritual training we leave to somebody else. That's a great, great mistake that we've made. And we have to call fathers back into the home to be the head of the homes and to nurture and feed their wives and their children. My wife, the sweet little wife that I have, she is so secure when she's under my covering, Derek. That's not oppressive to her. That is liberating to her. She has her area of the house that she runs and things that she does and areas. But she knows that when those tough decisions come into our life, she isn't burdened with having to make that decision. She knows that I, as the man of the house, can make the decision. And because we love each other and we're one, we will live with it together. And so we don't even know what a man means to be a man anymore. It doesn't mean to boss your wife around and go out and spit tobacco and play golf. Although I like to play golf, I don't spit tobacco. But it's the passing of our values onto the next generation. And look across America, brother. We certainly lost that.
Yeah. And I think that's the bigger point here, is that we as men need to understand what our role is supposed to be and then live up to it. Man up. And it's not about being the dictator inside our homes. It's about taking on that responsibility as the spiritual head of our household, which is a much bigger responsibility than just bossing our wives and children around.
Yeah, but the assault in America, Derek, is on the male. It's on the Christian male. It has been for, golly, who knows? I'll go clear back to Alfred Kinsey's report. I've read some great stuff from Jude Reisman on with the Kinsey report and what really that was all about, and the assault on the home and the assault on the man. And I was reading another study the other day that says the one thing that will make a man grow up faster than anything else, a young man to grow up faster than anything else, is to get married. And the second thing is to have children,
right?
Because the focus goes off of you onto those around you. And what do we see? Young men aren't getting married, are they, Derek?
No.
I know oodles and oodles of guys who are 30, 31 years old. They're not married. They don't have any kids. So the other side, man, the devil's team, they knew what they were doing. And we got a lot of work to do to try to rebuild the walls, for sure.
Well, and the other consequence of Kinsey and his work is that women... through the sexual revolution, think now that they've been liberated, that they don't need a man, they don't need that protective covering, they don't need a man to oversee their children, and that they are liberated to take on as many sexual partners as they can without any consequences. And if they do somehow get pregnant, the only responsibility now, there was a day when if a young couple had a child out of wedlock, father of the bride showed up at the groom's house
Amen.
Possibly armed, to compel
shotgun a young, wedding. Yep.
Yes, to convince a young man it was in his personal best interests to do the right thing and marry that woman and take on that role of father, protector, spiritual head of that household. We've lost that, and so young women who think that they are now liberated sexually and are free to do what they want, whatever they. What's really happened is that men have been freed from that responsibility, which is why you've got guys who are in their 30s and still sitting at home playing Xbox.
Well, see, Derek, this is one of the reasons I ended up on the Right Wing Watch and why Southern Poverty Law Center hates me so much is because we go to the abortion clinic. We do. We spend a lot of time outside abortion clinics. And you know what we tell women? This feminism, all it has done is given men the right to be irresponsible.
Yes,
that's all it has done.
Exactly.
You guys think you've been liberated, but you get yourself pregnant, and the guy says, "Gee, honey, I'm sorry, it's your choice, and you know, I'll give you $500, but you're the one." And I said, "Are you kidding me? That's liberation now? That if some guy can jump in the sack with you and get you pregnant, and then you're totally and completely responsible for that? How's that working out for us, right?" And so we tell men the exact same thing. They say, "Well, it's her choice." I said, "Really, dude? Does she pick the color of your truck? Does she get to have a choice over other issues in your life, or is it just over this one that you don't want to man up and be responsible
for?"
So, I mean, brother, they have sold us a lie, and we have swallowed it. And guys like me and guys like you, we're pushing back against that lie. I'm challenging lies, Derek. We are counterculture. We have Christian men. Our counterculture in America. John Lennon sang that song, "Imagine There's No Heaven. It's Easy If You Try." We're there, brother. We're there. That's the culture. That's the society.
Yeah.
And so we are now the counterculture. We gotta tune in, turn on, and drop in.
Mm-hmm.
We gotta reverse what Timothy Leary said. So we got a real battle ahead of us. But I'm optimistic that the Lord is with us, and great things are going to happen.
Hey, praise God. Let me ask you a question that. It comes from a relationship with a great man that I'm still friends with. He was the a fellow I've known for years through my hobby of singing barbershop quartet music, which I've done since a junior in high school. Have known about this fellow for years, had the opportunity to sing in his barbershop chorus, sang with him in a gospel quartet in a little Baptist church back in Illinois for 4 years. A fellow named Tom Woodall. He was longtime cross-country coach at Eastern Illinois University. He's retired now. He's in his early 80s, but still very active. And he's got a ministry, although he doesn't recognize that he's got a ministry. He still reaches out to many of the runners who were under his care during his long tenure at EIU. He won the NCAA Division II cross country championship, and I forget what year, but it was some time back. But many of those runners that he influenced as young men when they were 18, 19, 20, 21 years old now are in their 50s and 60s. They've got grandkids of their own. And he has had the opportunity to even baptize some of them now as they've come to the Lord later in life. What sort of feedback do you get from the players who were part of the teams that you coached?
Oh, man. See, Coach, thanks for that question, Derek. I love coaching. People say, "Do you coach anymore?" I say, "Oh, yeah, I coach all the time. I coach people all the time. It's what I do." But there's something unique about the opportunity to build in a life of a young man, particularly a young man in a society where dad's not real strong at home. Dad's off work and doing a lot of different things. And the number of kids that have young men, grown men now who look back over those days, say, "Coach, my goodness, that stuff that you taught me, I didn't even realize it, but what the values that you instilled in us and the work ethic, Coach, it's carried me through more tough times than you'll ever know. And I can't thank you enough." And I've heard from parents who said, "Listen, you were more of a father to my son than I ever was. I'm not proud of that, but the fact that you were there, and we appreciate that you were there." See, a culture and a society can only succeed, and we call it the cultural war, if there's a transference of values, right? It's a Psalm 78. So the children will teach it, the fathers will teach it to their children, who will teach it to their children. That's how a culture continues, Derek. And with public schools in particular, the situation where children and parents are now sending their kids off to public schools, the values are not being taught, for the most part, by the family anymore, and probably not by the church with 1 hour Sunday school a week.
Right.
We've now we send our children off to Roman schools, and we're to Caesar to be educated, and we're surprised when they come back as little Romans. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just trying to say, look out there, what the little cupcakes of fruitcakes that are out there picketing right now. Right there are children without any direction, thinking everything is about them. So some of the greatest evangelists we have in the world are those high school football coaches and cross-country coaches and basketball coaches who are still holding up a standard of rule-following and obeying and discipline. Brother, we sure need that. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, Derek. They're trying to eliminate football. They're going to the concussions and trying to make it a sissy sport because it's the same thing, brother. It's the attack on that masculinity
that's happening
everywhere across the culture.
Hmm. It's tragic, and we can see through history how this has worked out in past cultures. You mentioned Rome, and you know there was a. You can make a good argument that at the risk of being politically incorrect, the feminization of men in ancient Rome is what led to that society just dissolving in the face of the German. Yep. The German barbarians who came in from the north. Coach, you'll be headed back down, just to circle back to the beginning of the interview, you'll be headed back down to Texas when, and again, tell people how they can support your outreach to the flooded Gulf Coast area.
Well, thanks, Derek. I'm going down for the first time this on the 8th, flying down there and get a good overview of exactly what's going on. All the water will have receded at that point. People will begin to be going back home, and just the devastation is going to hit. So we've done this enough to know that the real work is not, although the great work's going on now, the real work's going to be 2 weeks, 3 weeks out when people finally realize their job's not there anymore, maybe, Derek. I mean, just the devastation. And so we're targeting the 21st of September and weeks following that we're going to continue to put boots on the ground. We're going to try to put them in there 30 at a time. We'll have them places where they can sleep, where we will feed them, where they'll be able to take showers and then spend the day out sharing the gospel. We got a group down there right now in Port Arthur who rescued guys last night and are preaching the gospel today. They set up bullhorns and they're out on the streets and they're passing out Bibles. Brother, this is a gospel opportunity. We cannot let this moment go by. We look, you know, it was one of Obama's crew. He said, you can never let a tragedy or a crisis go to waste. Well, brother, we got one. Yeah. We got one. Let's not let this thing go to waste. This is gospel central. Let's go give them the truth.
All right. If you can support financially or prayerfully, of course, that's much needed. But financially, go to CoachDaveLive.com.
Yes,
CoachDaveLive.com. Coach Dave Daubenmeyer, our guest today, Past the Salt Ministries coach. Look forward to seeing you again, whether it's sooner or later. But anytime you need any support or help, just reach out and let us know, and we'll be happy to direct people's attention your way.
Derek, I sure appreciate the chance to be on within your endorsement. Brother, listen, we will spend every cent, and we'll spend every cent on people down there. No big salaries here, no paid employees. We're going to go down and we're going to share the gospel of Jesus Christ and the bread in their bellies as well. So thanks for having us on here.
Check the show notes at vftb.net or below this video if you're watching this at youtube.com/Derek Gilbert, and I'll have a link there to Past the Salt Ministries. That's Coach Dave's website where you can donate. And you know, I don't want to cast aspersions on any other ministries or aid organizations, but with Coach Dave and his team, you'll know that your money is getting a real bang for its buck. And I will just leave it at that. And that's kind of important. This week it came out that Linda Sarsour, who is a Muslim activist who was heavily involved with the Women's March on Washington, D.C. after the inauguration of Donald Trump, was soliciting funds, ostensibly for Hurricane Harvey relief. But when you read the fine print, and at least she was, you know, had good enough legal counsel to be honest about this, when you read the fine print, you saw that it wasn't actually going for the relief of Hurricane Harvey victims. It was going to organize the communities to agitate for fair treatment or some such after the hurricane cleanup and, you know, storm cleanup is passed. What the people need right there, right now, is food, water, shelter, not community organizers. So just, whether it's Coach Dave or someone else, just know the ministry, know the aid organization that you're donating to. Just do your due diligence and check it out before you send your money off somewhere. Trying an experiment here. As you can see, we're on the back deck of our place here in the Ozarks. Maybe not the best lighting situation, but just trying to do something other than sitting in front of a brown curtain, which is the setup that I've got at the office, or in front of a bookcase, which is inside the house here. So we'll see if this works, and if so, maybe I can do a few more of these and get some more of these out. Hope you're enjoying a holiday weekend. Sharon and I spent the day today working on a couple of projects. She's finished the manuscript for her next novel, which is Blood Rites. That's book two of the Red Wing saga. And she sent that off to the typesetter. So our prayer is that we'll have some copies with us, several dozen copies, at the True Legends Conference in Branson in just a couple of weeks. Thanks to print on demand, that is possible these days to turn around printed copies that fast. But it also means that we'll have the Kindle versions available very, very soon. And I know that if you're like me, reading a hard copy book is fine, you know, something that's you can hold in your hands. But if I can put it onto an electronic device, I can carry literally dozens of books. And quite frankly, I've got probably 100 research papers, academic papers on my iPad right now. So we'll have the electronic copy as well, just about the same time the first print copies come in. But we will have hard copies if you're going to the True Legends Conference in Branson. Sharon's second novel, Blood Rites, will be there. I've been working on my presentation for the True Legends Conference, which, now that I've got the outline done, I'm probably going to have to cut down, because I probably have about 3 hours worth of material here, and I don't think I have that much time. Somewhere I can hear Gordon McDonald screaming. But I will save the outline, because it will likely become the outline for yet another book. So that's yet another follow-up book to The Great Inception. This one will deal more with the old gods and their return. Yes, the old gods are real, and they are coming back, but spoiler, I read the end of the book, and the good guys win. Next book, solo book, well, let me put it this way. The next book I did complete this week, my part of the manuscript. Josh Peck had his done a couple of weeks ago. We are co-authoring a book that will be out in time for the holidays. The topic is E.T. disclosure. And no, we don't believe that E.T.s are real, but there's a reason that we keep hearing about disclosure and extraterrestrials. And we will take a different look at this subject than I think you have seen from, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but I don't think you've seen a book that addresses the subject of extraterrestrial disclosure or existence and the reasons behind the disclosure movement quite like this one. So we've pieced together some things that I think are kind of eye-opening. And I'm glad Josh wrote the really heavy-duty stuff, because it's good to have at least one author on a book who understands the really meaty chapters. So that'll be out by Thanksgiving, I think, mid-November. Not going to tell you the title yet. We'll hold on to that for just a bit. That's still, we still need to get a cover design and a concept for that. But once we've got that and we've got the okay, we'll tell you that. But that's forthcoming from Defender Publishing before Christmas. Next year, I've got another solo project that I'm working on, which will be on the topic I brought to the conference in Boise, Idaho, and that's on the moon god and the importance of the moon god in the ancient world and today, because the moon god hasn't gone away. There are some who might think that after the fall of Babylon in the 6th century BC, you know, Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom that fell the night of the great feast that was hosted by Belshazzar, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Apharsin, when the Persians and the Medes took down Babylon. You don't usually hear historians talk about the fact that Belshazzar's father, who was the last king of Babylon, Nabonidus, being a hardcore worshiper of the moon god. Well, it's deeper than that. The fall of Babylon was just one more battle in a long war between the moon god and Yahweh. And I take that up to present day and prophetically where it projected out into the future. Why is the moon god still relevant in the 21st century? That's my next solo project, and that'll be out sometime in 2018. So one of the nice things about getting invited to speak at these conferences is that fear is a powerful, has a powerful effect to concentrate the mind. Frankly, I probably wouldn't work hard enough to get these books done ever if I didn't have the pressure of a deadline and knowing I was going to have to stand up in front of a whole lot of people and sound like I knew what I was talking about. So anyway, the presentation coming to the True Legends Conference will be something new that I haven't brought to a conference yet. It will deal with head shaping, cranial deformation in the ancient world. Yes, the skulls from Peru, the Paracas skulls, are interesting. I can show you pictures of skulls that look like those skulls that are about 5,000 years older. And we'll talk about the significance of those
in 2 weeks at the Branson Conference. The True Legends Conference is sold out, but you can still watch the conference as it happens and then view all the presentations on archived video through the live video stream option that's available through the website gen6conferences.com. That's G-E-N-S-I-X conferences.com. Get to see Steve Quayle, Tom Horn, L.A. Marzulli, Timothy Alberino, Dr. Michael Lake, the Spanish explorer Anselm P. Rambla, and yours truly, talking about hidden history, forbidden archaeology, strange things, and all of the stuff I'm bringing is coming from peer-reviewed, secular academic research. These guys have all the pieces to the puzzle. They just don't see the picture because they're not viewing it through a biblical lens. So that's coming up in 2 weeks' time, September 15th through the 17th. From Branson, coming to you live from the Mansion Theater in Branson, and this is an event I'm really looking forward to. 3,000 people, like I said, fear of standing in front of that many people and laying an egg has the powerful effect of concentrating the mind wonderfully. Then in October, the Blessed Hope Prophecy Forum, Sharon and I both will be speaking 3 times each at the Blessed Hope Prophecy Forum. That's going to be phenomenal. 33 speakers, including Gary Stearman, Tom Horn, L.A. Marzulli, Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, Bill Salas, Tim Alberino, Brent Miller Sr., Brent Miller Jr., Carl Teichrib, who is just wrapping up a week at Burning Man in Nevada. And this coming week on Skywatch TV, hope to get a report from Carl as to what exactly he saw. You may have heard in the news that with 70,000 people watching at the final ceremony where they have this big effigy that they burn, this giant effigy of a man that is burned to conclude the ceremony, a man managed to dodge security and firefighters and threw himself into the flames, threw himself into this giant pyre. He did not survive. There's no other word for that except demonic. Demonic. That is not rational behavior. Well, the gods got their sacrifice at Burning Man this week. Anyway, Carl Teichrib was there, and we'll have a chance to talk to him, and he will be at the Blessed Hope Prophecy Forum in Oklahoma City in October. Dr. Michael Lake will be there. Josh Peck will be speaking there as well. Colonel Bob McGinnis, one of our favorite people. Just a great gathering. And again, if you can't make it to the conference, you've got the video streaming option, and the conferences from, or the presentations from the main room at the Blessed Hope Prophecy Forum will be archived for weeks after the fact, a couple of months after the fact, I believe, and well worth your investment. Tomorrow being Labor Day, Skywatch TV taking a day off, but we will have a shorter version of the interview with Coach Dave as our first update of the week, as we again try to direct people's attention to the relief effort in Houston and the Houston area. It's mind-boggling, but as devastating as Hurricane Katrina was, Harvey actually hit a much larger area, and there are over 300,000 people who are driven from their homes. That's huge. That is about 8 times more people than I think. I'm going to have to check my math on that, but I think that's like 8 times more people than live in our entire county. And I may be off by a factor of 10 on that, because we, you know, our county seat here has about 440 people, all right? So that's just an amazing and incredible amount of devastation. And so our prayers and our support with Coach Dave and with every ministry and aid organization that's headed that way to help with the recovery effort. We appreciate it if you take a moment and give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you find A View from the Bunker, which is, of course, available wherever fine podcasts are sold. And A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod. His website is incompetech.com. And the opening announcements, the introductory voice you hear is by DC Good. Remember, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.